Welcome to another episode of Is This for Kids? I'm Jonathan Blevins.
I'm Katie, Mrs. Ruby.
And let us help you decide.
That's the end of the thing. That's what we do at the end.
I know, but it's fun to do at the beginning. It throws them off.
It does. Are you thrown off? I'm thrown off.
How is life?
How's life for me?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. It's so good. I've been working on a really cool project lately with a group called the Evangelization Lab, trying to reach out to like content creators out there who are getting out there. And I've been looking at like all these papal quotes about, you know, do you know that the first pope to bring up evangelization online was John Paul II?
I was just going to guess that. So
yeah, 2002, like he's been out there saying that. And then, in, you know, 2009, Benedict the 16th calls it the digital continent. And it's like, you have to get out there and evangelize it. And Pope Leo's like, hey, we got to go mend the nets. And like, just some of the coolest stuff that I've looked into. So I'm getting to spend a lot of time with cool digital content creators. You should check out Evangelization Lab. It's a little nonprofit on the side there.
Wow, look at you.
There you go. What have you been up to?
Working and hanging out with my wife and kids.
Yeah, true.
That is it. And this. The kids, as you know, as they get older, it just gets crazier. Oh, yeah. And ours aren't even involved ever in two sports at once. Like sometimes they overlap for like a week, but it's only ever one. And even that is sometimes it's just too much. We decided to do hockey.
Oh.
My oldest two boys love hockey. They love watching hockey with me. We're huge Red Wings fans. So we signed them up for like an intro to hockey thing. And it takes like 20 minutes just to put the gear on. And it's impossible. And they know how to tie shoes, but they don't know how to tie skates. And it is different.
Yes.
You have to make sure it's like super tight. And so it's just been like, I'm done with work at 3 or stream at 3. And then I am working for another hour. And then I'm husband and dad until 8:30. And then I hang out with Jody and go to bed. And that has been life. But it's been a huge blessing.
Yeah, I completely empathize with your hockey situation. I have 5 kids, but I have recently adopted a 69-year-old man, that is to say my father, who's quite elderly, and I have had to work on getting the compression socks on every day for him. So ooh. I have to go over to his apartment and help him get his compression socks on. And let me just tell you, that's a battle. That's
yeah.
A struggle. Yeah.
So we're kind of on the same boat.
It's very similar.
But your dad's not playing hockey.
No hockey afterwards. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. Just
is he watching movies with you, like Remarkably Bright Creatures?
He didn't watch Remarkably Bright Creatures with you, but I think he would love it, so I'm going to recommend it to him. This is one of the movies that came out on Netflix May 8th. Literally had the date like tattooed on my brain because I read the book, and I was so excited.
Did you read the book knowing we were going to watch the movie, or did you read the book just on its own?
I recommended we watch the movie because I read the book and knew a movie was coming out.
Wow.
Yeah. So I read the book, and I was like, this is fantastic. I was like, oh, please don't ruin it. Please don't ruin it. You know how when you read a book and you really, really love it?
Yeah.
Like, please don't ruin it. I was pleased. I don't think that they ruined it.
Shout out to whoever made A Walk to Remember and The Notebook, who also did not ruin it.
Right. Good job, guys.
Those are the last two times that I read a book and then saw the movie.
And thought it was okay. Well, Nicholas Sparks is just wordy.
So Nicholas Sparks is one of the greatest authors of all time.
Sure. Sure.
Thank you. And Mandy Moore was an unbelievable actress in Walk to Remember.
Somebody go back through the entire Is This for Kids catalog and find out how many times John has said he loves A Walk to Remember.
It's a great movie.
We've never even done a review of
it. We should. There's 5 different times in that movie that make me cry no matter what.
It's come up so many times that like we probably should have already done it.
And we should do The Notebook as well.
Okay.
I wrote you every day for a year.
That was the movie that my husband
what
and I watched.
What do you want? It's so good. Ryan Gosling.
I watched it on our first date. It was great.
Who knew that he would turn into this? Anyway, so Remarkably Bright Creatures. I did not know it was a book.
Yes.
And you're going to hear this on the next few Is This for Kids episodes. You're going to hear me say.
I did not know this was a book.
You're going to hear me say that the best movies in the last 10 years, maybe even just 5 years, have been movies that were based off of books. And I will list some of them in another episode.
Yeah, that's something that we see a lot of with movies these days, because studios are not willing to take a risk on something that isn't proven IP or intellectual property. So that's why we see so many sequels. They're like, we know everybody likes Spider-Man, so we'll just make another Spider-Man. Whereas if you've got a book where the book did really well, they're like, all right, fine, we'll make the movie because we know that it has a following already. So we've got sorry, guys. They're a little cowardly at studios.
Yeah, but like, it's good because if the books aren't doing what Hollywood is doing in some of the movies they're trying to make, which is to share whatever they think about the world, mm-hmm. It's really, really good to just have great stories.
Yes.
Which is what we've been getting. So Remarkably Bright Creatures, we were going to watch it with our oldest son because he loves the octopus.
Yes.
Like it was his favorite animal. I've now convinced him that they are aliens. It's kind of cool to think about. Believable. And I don't know if I actually believe it, but I think it's a really awesome, fun theory that they just were aliens that landed in the ocean. And
they struggled to make them breed in captivity. So that makes sense.
See?
Yeah.
So it's just really fun. And there's an, I'll let you do the, what it's about.
Okay, so we're in this episode, we're going to talk about both the book and the movie. So there's some slight departures, but the basic overarching theme is that you've got a young man named Cameron who is searching for his biological father. His mother is no longer in his life. In the book, she's just missing and dropped him off with his aunt when he was 10. In the movie, she's dead. So he's looking for his biological father. He believes it's this guy named Simon Brinks. So he travels to go and try to find Simon Brinks to basically extort him for back child support because he's broke. And in the process, he meets up with Tova, an elderly woman played by Sally Field in the movie. And she has lost her husband to cancer and her son has died under mysterious circumstances. It's thought that he may have committed suicide, but she doesn't believe that. So there's this like, you know, they both are two people who are kind of alone in the world, and they are end up both working at this aquarium in Seoul Bay where the whole thing is set. And overarching throughout the entire thing is the octopus, the giant Pacific octopus who lives in the Seoul Bay Aquarium. And he sort of watches them and he interacts with them a little bit and sort of is the thread that weaves everything together. I do not want to spoil the ending for you. I may have to if we talk about the book in any more detail. So from there, there's
we will give a warning.
Yeah, warning if I'm going to say it. Okay.
Because it is the movie at least super worth watching. Sally Field's unbelievable.
She's so good.
I mean, it's
when I
unreal.
Saw that she was cast, I was like, perfect.
Yeah,
this is going to be great.
It was so good. She puts on a great performance. I like you would think in the previews they show that the octopus kind of narrates the movie, and I think even in the previews, you can tell that he doesn't actually talk to them and that they can't like understand. Right. But I was like, this is going to be a little cheesy. Like, how do you pull that off? And yeah, they did. It was so good. So you fall in love with all the characters. And yeah, a shocker that another great movie put out by Netflix, I believe, right?
It is. And it was produced by Netflix. Yeah.
Was based off a book and it's great.
From a family friendliness standpoint, the book or the movie, there is references to drugs. The mother is a drug addict. This is true in both the movie and the book.
The mother of Cameron, who's not really a main character.
Yeah, she's not present. She's referred to, but not present in the movie. So the whole thing is that she's been absent. In the book, she's just left him. And in the movie, she has died of a drug overdose. And there is references to suicide, obviously, because of Tova's son. There's some swearing. There are two F words in the movie.
One of them's hard to hear.
One of them's hard to hear, yeah. And they're, I don't know. Again, I'm the kind of person who finds swearing appropriate when it's appropriate. And the type of circumstance that they're in when they're doing the swearing in the movie feels appropriate to me. Like if you know, I always told my kids, the example I always give is that in Jurassic Park, the guy's sitting on the toilet and he's about to get eaten by the dinosaur and he screams the S word. And my kids were like, can I say the S word? I was like, yes, when you're in that exact scenario.
Yeah, when a dinosaur is about to eat you.
When a dinosaur is about to eat you, you are welcome to use it. Full permission. So there is that in there. So, you know, if you need to use a content filter for that, there's that. There is not really any real violence. Nobody gets shot or stabbed or anything like that. And there's not really any sex. There's some, I think he kisses the girlfriend, but not really anything like hypersexual or anything like that. There is a reference to one character in the movie being gay. And that's like all they say about him is that like, I'm not your dad because I'm gay.
I don't even think I caught that, to be honest.
Oh, yeah, yes. They made him gay in the movie. In the book.
You just spoiled it, by the way.
I just said that somebody is not his dad.
Oh, shoot.
Anyway, slight spoiler. Simon Brinker is not his dad.
Now it's a real spoiler.
That's a real spoiler. But in the book, when he goes to meet with Simon Brinker, he has a daughter. And so like. He wasn't gay in the book, and there's more characters in the book. So, like, Cameron has a friend that he grew up with that, like, took care of him when his mom was not very able to take care of him, and she was a female. His having that friendship made it believable for him that Simon Brinker and his mother could have been friends without it ever being anything more than that.
Gotcha.
But so, like, that friendship paints that, and because they had cut that friendship, they needed to come up with something else that would make it believable that he would have never been with his mother in that kind of way. but yeah, from a family friendliness standpoint, those are the things you should probably know about.
Yeah, I don't think there's really anything else.
Yeah. What about a Catholic perspective, though?
Well, I mean, there's themes of healing, reconciliation, dealing with grief, which I feel like a lot of the movies we've been watching lately are focusing on grief, which is good. And human dignity.
Yes.
The way that every character, at least in the movie, the way that every character treats the elderly in that movie is awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, they're, especially Cameron, like, he's super helpful around the house. He's trying to, like, make sure that the railing is right. I loved the way that the elderly were portrayed as good, like they are.
Yeah. It reminded me, a mutual Twitter friend of ours, Leah Labresco Sargent, recently wrote a book that was put out by Notre Dame Press called The Dignity of Dependence. And now her book is from like a feminine perspective. It's called A Feminist Manifesto, although I wouldn't say it was. But I think she makes a lot of the same points, like that they're talking about the dignity of being dependent on one another. So Cameron's never had anybody to rely upon. And Tova doesn't want to be a burden to anyone, but she's got no husband, got no children, and she's aging. So she's in this awkward position where she doesn't want her friends to have to take care of her. She doesn't want Cameron to have to take care of her. And Cameron has never had someone to take care of him. And it's very much this human dignity thing that we belong to one another. It's such Catholic social teaching 101 right there that I love how that played out in the movie.
Yeah, and Tova like becomes this very early on, this motherly figure to Cameron and teaches him how responsibility and
how to do things the right way.
Yeah, and then they get in fights and there's like really just authentic apologies and forgiveness by both of them when they step out of line.
Yeah.
I actually loved the gas station owner and restaurant owner, guy. What do you remember his name? I don't remember his name.
Ethan.
Big beard.
The Scottish guy.
He was such a good character. Mm-hmm. Like he was always looking out for people, always willing to lend a helping hand, squashed rumors about Tova, respected her more than almost anyone else in the entire movie. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Do they get together in the book?
Yes. Yeah. In the end of the book that Ethan and Tova are together. But in the book, there's actually a different portion of it that I'm not surprised was left out for the movie, but it was really interesting to read through the book because the book is not written by a Catholic. It's not a Christian book by any stretch of the imagination, right? But these pro-life themes come up over and over and over. So you only see it with the one character, really, with the fact that Cameron's mother was very young. They say that, you know, Cameron's mother was a teenager when she had him. That's all you know. And that's kind of the only situation where that comes up. There's a vague reference to the fact that Cameron's girlfriend, Avery, has a teenage son. And so, like, if you look at it and do the math, you're like, she might have been a teen mom also. But that's explicitly laid out in the book, that Cameron's mother was a teenager when he was born, that Avery was 17 when she got pregnant with her son. And there's a third character that's not present in the movie. It's one of Tova's friends. She has these friends, the Nitwits, that are all, like, old ladies that she hangs out with. One of those old ladies' daughter had a child in high school as well. So there are three teen mothers present throughout the entire book. And there's a lot of discussion about, you know, what did it mean to keep that baby and to make that sacrifice for them? And Cameron's mom doesn't do it well because she becomes an addict. And, you know, Avery does it extremely well. She becomes a business owner. And then, you know, this friend's daughter does it very well and takes care of her mom. But the whole way through the book, the author is clearly having this weird war with herself where she wants to celebrate the choosing of life and how much you can overcome and how great you can be as a mother, even as a teenager in these really terrible circumstances. But she keeps throwing out, like, not that it wouldn't have been okay the other way, but, like, it's very obvious she's at war with herself where she wants to find this inspirational.
Yeah.
She wants everybody else to, but she also doesn't want to be accused of anything, of being pro-life. Like, nothing worse could be said about a person, right? So it's a really awkward and interesting, I mean, it's awkward because of listening to the author wrestle with it, but it's also extremely interesting the whole way through the book. You're like, this is so pro-life that, like, even this woman who has addiction has dignity and she chose life for her child. And even when she had to give up her son, like, walk away from him, he has difficulty with that. But every other mother that he encounters is like, you know, that was hard for her. What she had to go through was difficult, and which very much mirrors adoption, like the other options that you have out there. So if you're looking for a book, I would say that the book is still appropriate for probably middle school-ish and up. There is a little bit more swearing in the book. But if you're looking for that, like, like a very good allegory for how pro-life looks in real life without any of the platitudes or any of the, like the pretending that things aren't bad sometimes. This is a great one. Yeah.
That's good. I think that every mom, especially moms of sons, should watch the movie and potentially read the book.
Yes.
So this is one thing that's not a spoiler and one that is a little bit of a spoiler. Tova's son, as you said, passed away, and they don't know how. You find out later. And the spoiler part is that they had a fight right before that.
Yeah.
And she was an otherwise great mom, mm-hmm. and like parents and their kids fight, it happens. And she's so worried that like that's the thing he was thinking about, like that he was still mad at her when he passed away, and she like can't let it go. And it was awesome. I look back at my own life. I had a great mom. But I don't remember like any fights, and we did, like, you know, there were times I was mad at her for sure. And my dad, and like looking back, those would never be the things that I think about. I would think about the positives. And I think the movie does a great job of that.
Yeah.
Like Jodi, four kids, she stays at home with them. Our oldest is an awesome kid, but they butt heads. They're like complete opposites.
Yeah.
Or maybe they're very similar. I'm not sure. and so she was just a wreck. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, but here's what you remember. Like, ask Caleb his 10 memories about you, and he's going to bring up all the amazing things you do as a mom.
Yes.
So highly recommend watching if you're a mom. What about, what age would you recommend watching the movie?
So we watched it as a family. My 5-year-old was in the room when we watched it, but she was not really paying attention.
Yeah.
She only watched when the octopus was on the screen.
Yeah.
Fair. Okay. The octopus is super cool, but she was not very interested, but I didn't think it was inappropriate for her to see. She knows which words are bad and we don't say them. So that doesn't bother me. I would say it's appropriate and interest level wise, probably around 13.
Yeah. I'm right there with you. My oldest is 11. He's super, like I said, he's super into like the ocean and creatures. And so that made us think we were going to watch it with him. And I was like, let's just watch it first and then we can. I would probably watch it with him, but I agree with you that most people who aren't 12 or 13 are not going to be super interested in it.
Yeah, the octopus is cool, but most of it is a human story about relationships and love, and not love from like a romantic standpoint, although maybe a little tiny bit because Cameron does get a girlfriend, but like more from like a parent love and what the separation of that love can do to a child.
Yeah.
So,
it was good. Another good one. By the way, I will just mention it now. Mm-hmm. Amazing movies that were books first in the last few years. Wild Robot.
Yes.
Project Hail Mary.
Yes.
Are You There, God?
Yep.
It's Me, Margaret.
One of my favorites.
Are you proud of me for remembering the second part of that?
Yes.
And Christmas Pageant. Is that what it was called? Christmas Pageant?
Best Christmas
Pageant. Best Christmas Pageant ever was also a book.
Yeah.
So let's just keep it going.
We are doing a great job. You're picking great books.
It's making me want to read.
You should read. This is particularly a good book. And if you are an Audible fan, get the audiobook because the voice of the octopus is perfect.
Is it better than the movie?
It's so much better. Like that, it was Alfred Molina that did the voice of the octopus, who was Doc Ock in Spider-Man.
Mm.
You don't know who Alfred Molina is?
No, I thought of when you said Doc Ock, I thought of Octonauts.
Oh, Dr. Octopus.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the actor.
Okay.
Who does the voice of the octopus? But in the book, he's just a little bit more English and a little bit drier. He's like, day 1378 of my captivity, and he's like every third chapter is narrated by the octopus. Also, the spoiler, which we managed to get through without saying.
Yeah, so don't listen now. But I want the spoiler.
Hey, there is just so much content out there for us to navigate as parents.
I'm Jonathan Blubbins.
I'm Katie, Mrs. Ruby. Let us help you decide.
Is this for kids?